Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 9th day of March 2020, and we are going to, until 1 o'clock with today's program, because we have athletics from 1 o'clock here on Voice of Barbados. With me as my production assistant and my producer, as technical operator and producer, is Michelle Brathwaite. As usual, you can communicate with us by calling 4341790. You send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. Well, one of the dominant discussion points today is the situation in Guyana. We're going to try to get some kind of background information as to what is happening there at the moment. And naturally, too, there's a lot of concern about what's happening with COVID-19 internationally. You have seen a dramatic fall in the price of oil, petroleum products, and you also would have seen some significant impact on the stock market performance as well. So let's come straight to the telephone lines and see who is there. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm well, and you?
Not too bad. But you know, I can't really involve in Guyana. I always tell people they don't know what's happening in Guyana, so the people down there got to know what they're doing. Those foreign places, I don't get involved in. Now, let me get straight home. Now, David, some occurrence taking place in Barbados that has me surprised. Now, they shut down a parliament for what we consider mold or some environmental problem. But you know, strange enough, I have only heard one person complain about the sickness in the building. I haven't heard anybody else, but yeah, it shut down.
Well, that's not exactly true, because somebody had pointed out some time ago, before he left Parliament, former Prime Minister Arthur had also been raising some concerns about what was happening there with the environment. Now, there may well be those who have spoken publicly, but that doesn't mean that others haven't spoken privately about what is affecting them.
But naturally speaking, they are public figures. And the same way you could know from civil servants about a building, I think we should know about
Parliament. Well, you know, Barbados, but public figures also carry private lives, and some of them seem to hold on to the notion of their privacy to a greater degree than others. We've had many examples in Barbados where public figures, people who've been elected by members of the public,
all right,
have refused to say publicly what has happened to them.
All right, but now with the result of that, let me deal with some things that took place with the estimates. Now, I don't know if the older the politicians get, if they feel more comfortable asking questions, or I don't know if the questions were personal questions, but the answers that was coming left a lot to be desired. Now, my representative asked the Minister of Environment about the building in St. Thomas, the sanitation building. And his reply was, it's something like a felony. And how the condition of the building, this building, some section of the building had its windows and all such like. Now, David, common sense should prevail in this country. Now, if you make a contract with a contractor to build something for you, then it is finished, and he writes off the building or says that it is complete, and you realize it's incomplete. What we usually do? Huh? The contractor would not be accountable to whoever the building was built for.
Well, I would hope so.
So I find it strange to hear the Minister of Environment speaking about this building. And you know what?
What is strange about it? To hear him give an assessment of whether it is fit for people to work in it or not?
Well, he is not in position to say that. But what I am getting at, that if you pick up this building, and you realize the building is not complete, he should not be arguing with if the building is worthy of working in it.
Why
you
not?
Deal with the contractor. You have to deal with
but
the
he's reporting to the public. What are you saying? If he is a politician, a member of parliament,
yeah.
And the people of Barbados are asking a question, which is, why is it taking so long?
Yeah.
So he is duty bound to explain to the public what he understands to be the problem. What's wrong with that?
Listen, David, don't let me tie ring drunk people's head. The fact remains, if you find something wrong, the first person you have to deal with, you should tell the
You
person.
Don't know whether he's done so already.
Let me tell you what I know then. Let me tell you what I know, because you take and tell me I don't know. He went on to say that he gave or negotiated a contract with the same person at a lesser price. Could you go into a negotiation?
I think that you're trying to go on to a completely
different
issue. Because you are...
It's needed truth, right? If you find out that contractor was inefficient, why will you negotiate another contract? That's the problem I'm dealing with. Good? Now, let me go on now to the question about the three buildings in Rock Hall. Now, that building, those three buildings was prepared under the former BLP administration when they leave office. That is why we have to ask questions, and that is where I'm seeing the journalists falling down. Now, those three buildings were built under the former BLP administration. I really thought they had complete. But I heard Ms. Ford ask about $2 million that were spent under the Democratic Labour Party since they came into office and found those buildings. They thought the buildings were complete. Now, right now, as they speak to you, there is more work going on these three buildings in Rock Hall. Could we at any time get the estimation of the cost when the BLP leaves the government in 2008, how much those buildings have cost, how much money the former DLP spent on them, and how much money is being spent on them now? These are questions that journalists should be seeking to find out.
You remember the public, you raised the question. Let's accept that you are as good a position as anybody else to raise it. Stop passing it off to just journalists. Journalists do it on your behalf. Don't forget that.
Okay. All right. Now, this brings me now to a conclusion.
No, we got to go. We got to go because, you know, you've spent a fair amount of time. Not really. You've spent a fair amount of time. And as I told you, there's some other people lined up, including, I think we got some people here from Guyana. I have Mr. Ramsarup. Peter Ramsarup is on the line. He is representing the PPP Civic in Guyana. And basically, Mr. Ramsarup, I wanted to get some assessment of what has been happening over the weekend in particular. We heard that the High Court there has said that President Granger could not be sworn in for a new term unless, as I understand it, there is this issue of verification in Region 4. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay,
This is not Mr. Khan.
Who is it?
I'm just a caller calling in.
My sincerest apologies. Well, I got mixed up there. Sorry. Yes, you go ahead, sir, until I get Mr. Khan. Uh-huh. Hello? Yes, good morning. You on the air? Hello, good morning. I think we're having some problem with that connection, so until we sort it out, let's move on to another call. Down to brass tacks.
Hello?
Yes, morning.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what went there. And your previous caller talked about journalism, and I would say the nation is missing a man like Mr. Harold Hoyt.
How so?
Recently, too, I'm involved in horse racing. Recently, we had an issue where a horse broke its leg, and they bought it as front page, big picture. Fine, they can do what they want because it's their newspaper. Saturday, we had the premier horse racing event of the Caribbean. Yesterday was International Women's Day. The race was won by a female trainer. I don't see why they should highlight. I can't tell them what to put. They could have put the Family Feud in the smallest caption and a big enough caption to show somebody like Liz Dean have won the premier horse racing event of the Caribbean. They have a little caption that Janon won his fifth. Yes, he's record holder at 26 years old. Fine, but that's a little caption in the corner. The same way they highlighted the broken foot horse on a big picture, they could have done something to that effect for the Gold Cup.
Okay. Now, you were saying?
I think the nation needs to clean up the act, man. I involve politically too, and I like the news about the Family Feud because that favors my party. But beside that point, the Gold Cup is a premier event of the Caribbean, and you have Sir David Steele at 81 years old.
Man, come on! The Gold Cup was highly covered all Saturday, across the place.
Agreed.
No, come on. They had what they consider to be an exclusive story. And let me say to you that in journalism, if you believe that you've got a good exclusive as opposed to something that everybody else has covered, then you're going to go with the exclusive. You know, I don't understand why some of you have a real difficulty with it. I see somebody else here and some people online trying to take the newspaper to ask for the thing. Let me put it this way. I disagree with those of you who don't think that it is front page material. And I'll tell you why. We're dealing here with the family of a former Prime Minister of Barbados. It's a prominent family. The issue that has been put on the table, as far as I can see, is a matter of contract. It is the extent to which a contract which was perceived to have been made by one party to the other is actually being honored. And therefore, it becomes an issue which can legitimately end up before the court. But it is also one of those interesting scenarios that can happen in people's lives. I see absolutely nothing wrong with that story being where it was. And those of you who have a difficulty with it, well, so be it. But my position is the Gold Cup was covered by it was covered by us extensively. It was covered by television extensively. It got what it deserved. I don't understand why it must take pride of place over what they see as an exclusive story that, in their judgment, speaks to the issue of the contractual relationship between two prominent people in the country. So I don't see what there is to worry about. Down to brass tacks. Hello, Mr. Khan.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, Mr. Khan. Peter Khan.
Good morning, David.
Yes. Is this Peter Khan from Guyana?
It is.
Okay.
Imran Khan.
It's Imran Khan. Now, Imran Khan is representing the alliance. Peter Ramsarup is representing the PPP Civic. Now, Imran, since I have you on the line first, give me some assessment, and the people in Barbados, there are many people in this country who want to get some update on what's been happening there. Over the weekend, what has happened in Guyana with the political situation, the stalemate that you seem to face there?
Thanks, David, for having me on the program. I apologize for interrupting the fascinating discussion on the Gold Cup and the issues arising therefrom. First of all, I heard that you mentioned a few minutes ago, I believe, as you were attempting to introduce Mr. Ramsarup, that the Chief Justice in the High Court here ruled that President Granger could not be sworn in. I just want to correct that because that is not the case. What the Chief Justice has ruled is that she has jurisdiction to hear the case that is, well, the issue of the injunction that has been filed against GCOM, that she has jurisdiction to hear that, and she will so do tomorrow. So
in the interim, can Mr. Granger be sworn in?
The injunction is asking for that not to happen.
Okay.
So she has not ruled on that matter as yet. The GCOM lawyers, when they went to court on Saturday, had made the case that the Chief Justice does not have jurisdiction to hear the case. And she ruled yesterday on Sunday that she does have jurisdiction and that she will go ahead and hear the case on Tuesday, tomorrow, at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
So that will happen tomorrow. Today being a holiday here in Guyana, Pago, the Hindu holiday. David, I am not sure exactly what has been transmitted to your audience. So what I'd like to do is just give you a little background. Obviously, elections were held in Guyana on Monday, and there were several statements from all of the observer groups that the elections were free, fair, and free from fear when they were held. We were going through the process of, well, GCOM, that is, was going through the process of declaring results. As you know, we have 10 regions, which are called districts electorally. We have a different system than your constituency representation system that you have in Barbados and that exists throughout the Caribbean. We have a PR system here in Guyana. So the results were being declared. We had gotten the declaration from GCOM from 9 of the regions, and we were left with one region, Region 4. Now, that is not unusual because Region 4 is the largest region. It is the largest voting block in Guyana with over 285,000 votes. It has over almost 900 polling places, polling stations. So it takes a bit longer than the other regions, which have far less voters and far less polling
But you know places. Full, look, but bottom line is, do you know full well that in all of this, international observers have expressed their concern about the way that this matter has gone down. And it comes across from what has been reported from Guyana and what these entities have been reported as saying, that they do not believe that the process is one that is transparent enough. So the question is, once you're faced with that, you have a PR, a public relations challenge. You may even have a legal challenge coming out of it, depending upon what happens in the court. So over this weekend, in light of that, what was the kind of environment in which you all have been living in Guyana?
Well, we've had some issues with regard to maintaining the peace. There's no doubt or question about that. You would have seen reports. But one has to examine, David, the basis on which those statements have been made, particularly by the observers, that the process, they have questions about the process. Now, I think what is not coming through to the region and perhaps to the people of Barbados and even the media of Barbados is that some observers are making those statements on the basis that they have statements of poll. Now, statements of poll are possessed by three entities in Guyana at the moment. That would be GCOM, the official authority. It would be our party, APNU-AFC, that had polling agents at all of the polling stations throughout Region 4, and also the PPP. Now, as you would know, there are several other smaller parties who contested the elections in Region 4, and they would have a small number of statements of polls, in some cases less than 20, because they did not have the capacity to have polling agents at all the 879, I think, polling stations. But a lot of those parties, almost all of them, and some observers have been claiming that they have statements of polls, and it is on that basis that they are saying that they have questions with regard to the veracity of what has been announced by GCOM. Now, GCOM did not provide those parties and the observers with statements of poll. Neither did our party. But they're claiming that they have statements of fault. So there's only one other person or one other entity that they could have gotten those statements from, and that would be the TPP. Now, the issue here, which is very critical for you and your audience to understand, is that the PPP jumped ahead of DECOM and released a tally sheet. And I understand they may have subsequently released some statements of polls that declared the results for Region 4 even before DECOM had done so. Now,
but you know, the bottom line is that.
No, for your,
just hold on, sir. Just hold on. Just hold on. Hold on. Just let me. Let's recognize that we won't necessarily be able to get into all the nitty-gritty of what has taken place there. What we have before us is that the Chief Justice yesterday said that she would begin hearing the case on Tuesday to determine whether elections officials will need to resume verification of votes in this area known as Region 4. And the opposition's claim is that the Region 4 results were released without verifying the votes at more than half of the polling stations, and that the results were inflated to put the alliance ahead. Now, this therefore needs to be thrashed out. You will accept this will have to be thrashed out in the proceedings that are going to take place, either within GCOM, which is the electoral body, or within the courts.
The court, David, that is what is going to be ruled on.
Right. It wouldn't make sense us trying to thrash that out here and now. At least
it's important because you raised the point about Region 4, and we have to understand the basis on which the PPP is making this claim. Now, the basis.
But you are making a claim that they advanced the results prematurely, and they are making a similar claim against the alliance.
No. They're making the claim on the basis that between 2015 and 2020, in Region 4, they would have gained 10,000 votes, whereas our party would have gained 489 votes. Now, Region 4 is our largest voting block and our strongest voting block. So any claim on those basis obviously would be preposterous. They're saying that the PPP, the opposition that has lost Region 4, that they have acknowledged has lost Region 4, has gained 10,000 more votes in this region between the results.
Let's talk about the violence that has taken place.
Before we get there, David.
Mr. Khan, please. You know, as I said, there is a limit. There's a limit to how far we can go within the intricacies of what has happened back and forth between the PPP and the alliance. And part of the challenge, just hold on a minute. That's true. But at the same time, I think we also have to have some balance in this. I've asked somebody from the PPP to give me their perspective, but they are not here at the moment. In the meantime, I wanted to get a sense.
I'm not taking a call to be far from balance, David. I just wanted to ensure that you.
No, you're pretty. You know, you're pretty dominant, Mr. Khan. Give me a chance, please. I tried to get a sense here of what is happening on the ground. In all of this, there are people who are concerned about what is happening. You know, to Guyana. Guyana has had an improvement in its economic fortunes, and therefore, this whole situation with all the difficulties that you've had on the ground with the violence and that sort of thing has implications for the country's future. So can you give us a sense of what has happened over the weekend in that regard? Taking the sheer political intrigue between the alliance and the PPP, which will, as you said, have to be fought out now in court tomorrow. Outside of that, what is happening on the ground?
Well, the situation within the last 24 hours, I would say, has returned to calm and normalcy. We did have some flare-ups before that, in the 48 hours before that, where we had some incidents of PPP protesters having attacked the school buses, school children, having attacked some police officers, having chopped some police officers. And we had flare-ups of violence in various communities, mainly the PPP communities, where they blocked the roads and they lit fires and so forth. But that situation has not continued. The situation.
What has influenced that? What has caused it to improve?
Well, I believe that the security forces have gone on the ground and have cleared the roadways that were blocked. There were fire set. They put those out. So an increased presence of the security, and belatedly some PPP leaders have come forth in the public and have called for calm and peace and for persons to return to their homes. And it would appear as though their supporters have, for the most part, heeded those calls. So we've had a situation where the flare-ups have not continued in the past 24 hours. But the situation, and that is not to say, because as you rightly said, there are a lot of Guyanese, particularly in Barbados, who are concerned with what they would have been hearing, and therefore they themselves may be anxious.
Yes.
There is a situation that is, the situation is tense in the country, there is no doubt about
it. Remains
that.
Tense.
We've had elections. It remains tense, but the violence, the flare-up of violence has not continued. We've had elections a week ago now, and we don't have the official declaration of results from GCOM. And obviously, people are anxious in the country. They would like us to get past that. But the PPP, as you said earlier, went to court to delay GCOM from making those declarations.
Well,
we have to await the outcome.
Let me get an assessment of the situation on the ground from someone on the other side of the political fence quickly. And that's where we bring in Mr. Peter Ramsarup from the PPPC. Good morning, Mr. Ramsarup.
Good morning.
Yes. Well, I've heard a bit already from Imran Khan here, who's been talking about the political differences between the alliance and the PPP, which have now put us in a position where the court is to decide tomorrow whether election officials will need to resume verification of votes in Region 4. I don't really want to get too much into the back and forth between the two of you on that. But from your vantage point, when you look at the situation on the ground over the weekend and today, what is it like?
Well, it's much calmer than it was 2 days ago. Everyone now is back on looking at what the reality and what the process needs to be continued. The correction is that the PPP is not there to stop any results. The results has not been verified. It was stopped by GCOM in the process. The numbers do not add up around the country. Both all the observers, all the nation understands, because of very public information, the statement of polls. When you add up all the statement of polls around the country, with the 9 polling regions that has been certified, Region 4, the PPP has won the election clear by 17,992 votes. All we are asking for in Region 4 is to continue the process, verify the process, and then you can declare the numbers.
What's involved in the verification process?
Verification process is we were sitting there. We had our statement of polls on our desk. GCOM has a statement of polls. They then says in box 1, there is 20 for the APTO, there's 10 for the PPP. We verified our numbers correct. We put it in the spreadsheet. We were going through that process. 320-something, 300-plus was reviewed before the second phase, and all 300 had minor discrepancies. When we got to the second phase, then GCOM came in, stopped using the official statement of polls. Then they brought in a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet was what started the whole ruckus, because the spreadsheet had numbers that nobody else in the room had. And why did they stop bringing in the official statement of polls? So the whole process needs to continue, the verification needs to continue, and it would show the real numbers in what Region 4 numbers would be.
Okay, so with Mr. Khan, Mr. Khan? Mr. Khan, are
Hello?
You there?
Yeah.
Okay, so now with now that we have Peter here with us, Peter Ramsarup, your own assessment of the root cause of this situation, why are we at this stage, therefore? Because he's given his assessment, and to close it off, I'll let you give yours.
Well, we're at this stage because obviously there is a court action that has been filed to prevent the process continuing. What we've had is GCOM has already gone ahead and declared officially and formally.
Because that's a lie.
Just hold on, Mr. Khan. Mr. Khan. Hold on.
To continue the verification. It's not to stop the result. It's to continue the verification. That is why we're in court.
Okay, Mr. Khan. Hold on. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Mr. Khan
sure
is.
You're going to continue to allow me.
Mr. Khan, please continue.
I
don't want you to be interrupted.
Thank you, David. Yeah, the issue is that the PBB has taken legal action to stop GCOM from continuing the process of officially declaring the national results. All 10 regions have already been officially declared. The next step is for the chief elections officer to declare the national results, to allocate the seats in the National Assembly, 65 of them, and for the president to be sworn in. There is legal action that has been taken that will be heard tomorrow by the Chief Justice, that action having been initiated by the PPP to stop GCOM from going ahead with the process.
Because they have not verified the data.
So his point is that, Mr. Khan, Peter Ramsarup's point is that a critical issue is verification of the data. Where do you stand on that?
GCOM has done what is required by law.
No, they have not done. They've made
Okay, guys, let's move on because this program can be exclusively about the situation in Guyana. But this has been a matter that has been significant within the region, and therefore we thought it important that we should at least get some assessment this morning of what the situation is like in the country. And
why did 50-plus countries come out, including the United States at Trump level and around the world, OAS, the Carter Center, come out and says the process has not been verified?
Precisely.
Mr. Khan, why would you say the process has been, when 50-plus countries has come out and said the process has not been verified?
That's reality.
The world, you're talking to the world.
Mr. Khan, are you saying that verification is not necessary?
I'm saying that GCOM complied with all the legal requirements.
Does that mean verification?
Does
that mean verification?
The results for the 10 regions.
But does that mean verification? And is verification not important in your view?
There are requirements that are required by law, David.
Yes.
That GCOM has complied with in declaring the results for all 10 of the.
But you're not answering my question about verification. Their point is that a critical component in this is verification, and that was incomplete.
And it's not just our point, David. It's the world. All the observer groups are saying the same thing.
Pardon, Mr. Khan?
That issue is what the Chief Justice will
sort out tomorrow. Okay.
The argument.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. So that you heard from Imran Khan from the Alliance in Guyana, and you also heard from Peter Ramsarup from the PPPC. I think now we have those of you who might not have understood what the issue is going to forward tomorrow, that you see everything revolves around this question of the verification exercise. All right? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Thanks. Good morning, Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, brother Alex. How are you doing?
I'm well.
There's two things we want to discuss with you this morning. But one, I got a little taste of the Guyana thing, although you still don't understand. You understand what's going on there in Guyana?
I think I do. As I said, it is a process, and the friction is over an aspect of that process, whether it was followed in the way that it should have been by the electoral body. So that's what the court will decide tomorrow.
Okay, so anything the court can decide, we can't speak about.
Well, we are not held by their jurisdictional boundaries. We are outside of Guyana. If you're in Guyana, it's a different matter, but we are not held by that here.
Oh, okay, thank you. But listen, yes, it was International Women's Day.
Yes.
My favorite lady, when last have you heard her?
Who is your favorite lady?
Miss Verla De Pisa. I haven't heard her or seen her in the paper.
Didn't read the newspaper yesterday.
No, to be honest, my paper is still rolled up in the plastic here on the table.
Well, when you put down your paper, it is very difficult then to say, I haven't seen or heard. You've got to preface that by saying, I haven't read the paper today. I didn't read it yesterday. And because I didn't read the paper for the last 3 weeks, I wouldn't know what anybody has said.
Okay. Well, to be honest, it's my fault. But I like to hear or see her on television or social media, you know, discussing things. And I would read, to be honest, when I finish speaking to you, I'm going to take up the paper. I read what she have to say, because she makes some very interesting points. So thank you for putting me in my place that I read the paper.
Only because you came with a line that suggested that you should have read the paper if you wanted to make that statement.
I got down the line, the paper still here, wrap up. Here the paper, my went out yesterday.
Well, I've taken the opportunity to remind you that she said something yesterday in the paper that you
tell me what was that?
Well, you go and read it for yourself. Go and read it for yourself.
All right, thank you, David.
All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David. What I'm calling about is the workers, the restaurant workers, is the CHAPS group.
Yes.
All kind of people in here commenting about these workers that just get sent home last week.
Yes.
But I and 14 others, I don't know if I can tell you where we work.
Well, it depends upon where you go after that.
I can tell you. You could cut it out if you have to. But we are data entry operators. We were data entry operators at the Barbados Immigration Department.
Right. That's all right.
We were home from October last year. We have not received a cent in compensation as yet. And I haven't heard no ministers. We're part of the tourism group, too. And I hear no ministers, nobody at all, commenting on this situation.
What's the last thing they told you all?
The last thing they do is give us the green paper and told us that we will be on layoff. Layoff from October up until now. No response, though. We were supposed to go back. Well, they wanted us to write letters to go back to do some work that they have there for us to do. But so far, the girls that wrote the letters have not been called back as yet.
Well, I can understand how you would feel about it. That it's poor. You haven't been communicated with well enough. You've been left somewhat in limbo.
Very much so. And the union representative, the person that is representing us from the union, they wrote a letter to the Honorable Prime Minister.
No, that's not good enough. It's not good enough. The government,
not at all.
The government really, if what you're saying is true, because you know many people, many people come here and make claims that they can't verify. So that is why I always make the point that if it is indeed true, then on the face of what you are saying, the government itself needs to do a better job, because you're put in a situation where the government is looking at others in the private sector and saying, well, this is what you are supposed to do. This is the way you should do business. But the government also has that responsibility to do it right.
And some of us have been working 19 and 20 years and haven't received a cent in compensation as yet.
They weren't supposed to retrain some of you as well.
We were supposed to go to the digitization.
Yes.
To do the digitization when it happened, but no word on that as yet either.
All this time has passed, and I mean, if
almost
you've had no word,
for unemployment,
no word, no money.
No word, no money. So you know how it goes.
No.
Bills piling up.
No. I hope that by you picking up the phone today and calling on this matter, that somebody in government will put out a statement to you all. I mean, actually write you, even if they don't come within the public domain. But as I say to you, I mean, the government looks kind of hypocritical if it speaks about the issue at CHAPS on the one hand, but then has situations like this where people are pointing an accusing finger at it.
But we weren't considered government workers, but we were doing work for a government department.
But does that complicate your situation? It is quite possible. But at least, even if it does, then somebody needs to explain to you what is happening there, you know? They shouldn't just leave you up in the air like that.
I don't believe so either. So hopefully, you know, brass that is get some kind of response.
Well, I sincerely hope so.
I hope so too, so fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, please.
All right. How have you been coping in all of this, though?
Oh, boy. Well, the unemployment, it helping, but still, it could be more.
It's not enough.
Not enough. You're writing applications, you ain't getting a response, but these hotel workers, these restaurant workers, you see people offering them jobs and all kind of things.
Well, they have had experience in working in restaurants. So that's why people would you know, look for that.
I guess nobody ain't got no use for the data entry operators today.
Well, another issue I have to face is this. If you are over 50,
mm-hmm.
and if you are female,
mm-hmm.
exceedingly difficult.
Female?
You tell me about it. Has that been your experience? The discrimination is harder in the environment for the woman to get a job after a certain age. You haven't found out?
Well, you're right, you know, you ain't get people saying to keep you on fold, they ain't got no vacancies and whatnot.
Well, you haven't heard of...
And I'm in my 50s also.
All right, then. Haven't you heard other people complain about it?
Well, some even younger than me.
That's correct. And it is pretty widespread. I mean, the only thing that helps you over that particular hurdle is a high degree of qualification. And even then, people can be told, you know, you're overqualified.
Okay.
So that's something which has crept in. I mean, Barbados has developed an environment in which there is a lot more emphasis on young people today. If you listen to the official, if you listen to the official narrative, it is all about the young people. Now, nobody is saying that young people don't deserve attention, but you have to ask the question whether it's a lopsided focus.
True.
You know, everything is aimed at that. Look, you have to look after the young, and you have to look after the elderly. And Barbados is also, that's in terms of jobs, that's part of the problem. And in terms of when people get to the point where they cannot look after themselves well enough, we also have a growing problem in Barbados. So I see all of that before us.
Well, hopefully some kind of response will be coming.
I look forward to hearing good news from you very soon.
Well, if I get any, we'll call back and let you know.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
You're most welcome. You know, sitting as a moderator, you go through a lot of stuff. You get some of it on the air and some of it off the air. Well, I went to the Cheapside Market on Saturday. And two Dems approached me. One was a younger Dem, who is speaking a language of change. We had a polite and interesting conversation as I listened to that particular individual speak about how he saw the party, how he saw himself, and what he thought was absolutely necessary to take it forward. And then there was an older Dem who cussed me from, start to finish. From the time he saw me until the time he left me, he was cussing. He accused me of using brass tacks to look after the interests of the Labour Party. He told me how much of a pimp I was for the Labour Party. Mind you, he'd been in the Democratic Labour Party for eons, you know, one could only conclude that that was projection, because he obviously knew what he was doing for the Democratic Labour Party all of those years. But it was sad, particularly sad, to see the contrast there. The younger man and this older supporter of the party who reflects something that appears to have come over the Democratic Labour Party that is difficult to understand. The older, and some of them not so old, you know, but people from the last administration and some of those who support them, they just have not been able to come to terms with what has happened. They don't listen at all to criticism. They stopped listening a long time ago. That's why a host of them stopped even participating in things like brass tacks and that sort of thing, because they just, for them, they just could not accept that there was anything other than the Kool-Aid that they were drinking, you know? And that fella, I must tell you, perhaps I engaged him a little too much in retrospect, but he cut a very sad figure. And if you're going to go into your old age with that kind of bitterness and stuff, because you cannot agree with a position which somebody else has taken, well, that's very sad. Part of the future of the Democratic Labour Party rests in finally listening to the public of Barbados in a way that those who belong to the last administration appeared not to listen. And I don't know where they're going to go with that kind of posture, but one thing I would say, if we sit here on brass tacks and don't listen to the people, program dead. So we have a vested interest to listen on our behalf and even on yours. Because if we don't know what's happening politically in this country, we cannot mount the types of programs and bring the types of panelists in that will hold your attention. This is down to brass tacks. The other interesting thing that has taken place here over the weekend, I don't know how many of you went to church yesterday, but the changes that they've had to make in church with respect to taking communion, hugging one another, one of the priests said to me that it would have been interesting to hear people who went to church and how they felt about the situation. But I know for sure that people are now taking this matter of COVID-19 in Barbados far more seriously. You're seeing what is happening in Italy. You're seeing what is happening in the United States. And, you know, you feel as though it is only a matter of time before it gets here. And to a large extent, it seems as though we have to start certain practices. So don't be offended if you come to me and I don't shake your hand. It's instinctive to shake hands, all right? But we are at the point where we really need to adjust. This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Yes, you're on the air.
Morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, hi.
Just a quick chat on the recommendations by the Attorney General with regard to the retirement age of the police.
That sounds reasonable to you?
Sir, all right. My name is Patrick Jones, the former president of the Police Association.
Mm-hmm.
In 1955, the then Police Association, the executive, asked the governor to have an inquiry into the police force. As a result, they set up the Commission of Inquiry. It was headed by Sir William Date. It's the Date Commission Report, 1955. He made several recommendations, including the very significant one that police officers should be able to retire after 25 years service because the police force is for fit, able-bodied persons. And then there was upward mobility and lateral expanse. You know, sometimes you had to wait for dead men's shoes. So I know that I'm very confident that we discussed this with Mr. Salvin Smith, who was the then PS Civil Service, with Mr. Clark, Mr. Ronald Fitt. We also gave the then Attorney General, Mr. Sir David Simmons, copies of the report. And I would just like to humbly suggest that the present Attorney General have a look at the Date Commission Report 1955 and be guided by those recommendations.
Let me ask you something, though.
Yes, sir.
When you made those recommendations, Barbados was not having as much difficulty in attracting people to the force. And if you retire people that early, where are you going to get the replacements? That's one of the first things that struck me.
Well, along with that, when we made the recommendations, we looked at a number of things why persons are not attracted to force. The conditions of service, for one. We look at the salary. I mean, and we gave a broad overview of what the salary is like.
But the job is more dangerous today than then.
Right, sir. So which means though that we should be looking though to have these conditions addressed and addressed rather quickly. Well, I am no longer there, sir. So I would take it that the present police association would be pushing these matters. But the Date Commission report is a good guide, and those recommendations were sound, and this was 1955. This is
a long time ago.
Right. So we can improve on those, or we can learn from
in 1955, Murphy was in the force.
Well, I wouldn't know, sir.
You know, Murphy was one of the white policemen in the, yes, in the Barbados sir. Police
yeah.
force.
Yeah, he had a nickname. I came along, I heard he had a nickname. I would not call it on the air.
You know, in 1955, Captain Farmer was in the force.
Yes,
I wouldn't be surprised if Captain Farmer must have been the commissioner of police back then.
Yeah, so the commission report is still worthy of note, sir.
That's a long time.
Okay, Mr. I wasn't born yet. Right. All right, sir.
All right.
Good.
Down to brass. Thank you very much. Down to brass staff.